Good morning. Today we're going to first continue and finish our discussion of Hashgacha, and then for the second half, Be'ezus Hashem, we're going to start a new topic of Bechiras Yisrael. There are packets up here on both. Last week, briefly saw the approach of Reb Tzadok, and today we're going to begin with more of the later thinkers on this topic. Most of our time we spent studying the Rishonim, the Rambam, the Ramban, though the Ramchal as well. And today we're going to start with some of the later thinkers, and we're going to begin with Rav Dessler, which can be found on page 72, who has a very far-reaching and a remarkable position on this topic. Rav Dessler writes here, which is on page 72, Mechtav Meliyahu Chelak Gimel, page 177, that Hateva hu shenasan habore chok bebriya shetisnaheg behanhaga mugbelet al siba umisovev. Essentially, what Rav Dessler develops is the notion that Teva is an illusion. It's simply a predictable nais. When we look at the world and we see something happens all the time, time after time after time, we call that Teva. But Rav Dessler says, in reality, Teva does not exist. Teva is nothing other. There is no difference between the ball that you drop going up and the ball that you drop going down, except for the fact that in your experience you've noticed the ball going down more often than you've seen the ball going up. However, in reality, there is no difference. And we won't read it inside together, but he gives a couple of mashalim here which very powerfully express how he sees that. He says there, in reality, why is it that when you put a seed in the ground and it begins to disintegrate and then come back to life to form a tree, we see that as teva, whereas if you were to see a body buried in the ground who died, who disintegrates and then comes back to life through resurrection, that would be a nais. In reality, Rav Dessler says, there is no difference between the two. Only, like we said, one is commonplace and one isn't. And thus, this is the way that we look at the world. He writes, when we look at the world, Yesh mistakel l'toch habayis derachor min ol shebedeles. Our perception of the world is like looking into a house, into a room, through a keyhole. V'yira et koseves, and you see a pen writing. You have a very, very narrow image, you only see a small part, so you focus in through your keyhole and handwriting. So you'll think that the hand is writing independently. Of course, if you saw the bigger picture, you would see that there's a person holding the pen and causing it to write. Likewise, when we look at the world, at least from a scientific perspective, we see it only narrowly, and thus we assume that there are independent laws of nature. That's equivalent to the handwriting independently. But if we were to have the whole picture, then we would actually see that it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu writing the pen, writing with the pen. And while, of course, science goes ahead and has explanations for this, but these explanations are essentially after the fact, meaning to say when we see things that are predictable, then we come up with explanations to explain and justify their predictability. But not that that's essentially the case. He writes, Hashem teva hu bitui hamechase b'shitchiyut nora'a es hachachma hanora'a hagdola b'solcha b'riya. That is what teva is. It's a term which superficially justifies the chachma that's hidden in the b'riya. And Choker hateva hagashmi mechapes tshuva l'sheilos habaos. Eich, kama v'heichan. The scientist asks questions. How much? Ulam eno yachol lanot al sheila lama umadua misnaig hateva kefi ma shehu misnaig. He says that a scientist, and this of course is the difference in a certain sense between physics and metaphysics, the scientist asks, how does this work? Or why is it that when this happens, that happens? Why is it when you drop the apple, it falls down and doesn't go up? But the scientist doesn't ask the ultimate question, which is, why is it such that the world functions in such a way? Even if you could have descriptions and models, even if you could use science to even be predictive, but nevertheless, it doesn't ask the ultimate questions of why. In another place, he goes even further. He says, what's the idea of Ein HaBracha Chala Al Davar Samui Min Ayin? It means that until something is seen, it doesn't in a certain sense exist. It doesn't really matter whether or not a certain thing is or isn't until you see it. Once you see it, so then, generally speaking, HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't perform nisim, meaning to say he doesn't deviate from the normal pattern. But if you haven't seen it, then you can, for example, daven that it change. So that's the opinion of Rav Dessler. Now, this is striking, especially when we go back and we consider the approaches that we've seen in previous weeks from the Rambam and the Ramban on this very matter. The Rambam certainly is very different, but even the Ramban, though on the one hand he also echoed this notion that there's no Teva at all, we saw when we studied the Ramban that that wasn't so simple, that the Ramban himself does seem to hold to some degree that there is a notion of Teva. The next thinker I want to look at is the famous passage in the Chazon Ish, in his Sefer Emuna U'Bitachon, explaining what Emuna and Bitachon is. And the Chazon Ish writes, Tos noshenes nisazricha belev rabim b'musag bitachon. There's a terrible mistake that people have in terms of what bitachon means. Why? Shem bitachon hamishamesh lemida mehulala v'ikarit b'fi hachasidim nistoviva b'musag chova lehamin b'chol mikra shepogesh adam v'amidaso likras asid bilti muchra v'shnei drachim batid achas tova v'achashnia v'loshnia ki betach yeletov. And someone who thinks the opposite lacks bitachon, meaning to say that there is a mistaken notion. What is bitachon? Bitachon means that it's going to be okay. There are two possibilities of what's going to happen. I'm going to get the job or I'm not going to get the job, right? I'm going to be cured or I'm not going to be cured. Someone who has bitachon believes that it's going to be okay. Whatever the option is, whatever is the better option, getting the job, for example, or being cured, is going to happen if I have enough bitachon. And if it doesn't happen, then that shows that there is a lack of bitachon. Bitachon means the belief that it's going to be good. There is a good, and it's going to be good. That's what bitachon means. I believe, I have faith it's going to be good. The Chazon Ish says this is absolutely wrong. Ve'en hora'a zu bebitachon nechona. Shekol shelo nizbar hanevua goral hatid ein hatid mukhra. Certainly not true. As long as there isn't prophecy, we have no idea what's going to be the future. Nobody knows. Aval inyan bitachon hu ha'emun she'ein mikra ba'olam. What is bitachon? Bitachon is the notion that there's no mikra ba'olam. There's no such thing as mikra, meaning to say, everything that happens, happens for a reason. And whether or not the person gets the job or doesn't get the job, whether or not the person is healed or is not healed, that has a reason. And so, the Baal Bitachon recognizes that there's a possibility he won't get the job. And even if he has the ultimate level of bitachon, he still might not get the job. What the Baal Bitachon believes is that if he doesn't get the job, that's because that's what the Ribono Shel Olam wants. And if he doesn't get cured and he dies of his sickness, he believes that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. It's not the bitachon that it's going to be okay in the sense that he's going to get cured or get the job. It's the bitachon that it's going to be for the best in the sense that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a tovu meitiv and he controls the scenes. But it's very different than the common perspective, the Chazon Ish says, that people have. Aval inyan, top of page 73, Aval inyan habitachon hu ha'imun she'en mikra ba'olam v'chol ha'nas etachas ha'shemesh hakol b'hachraza mito yisborach. Thus, bitachon is the belief that there is no mikra. Now again, here too, we have the Chazon Ish. Perhaps he doesn't go as far as Rav Dessler, but essentially agreeing to the notion that there is no such thing as mikra. Absolutely not. And that's what bitachon means. Bitachon is the belief that there is no mikra, that everything that happens is behachraza me'ito yisporach. It's because God has decreed it. Parenthetically, there are some thinkers who do seem to accept the rejected position of the Chazon Ish. I'll quote to you one line from the Nefesh HaChaim, Shar Aleph Perek Tes. He writes, V'lochein be'ez kriyas yamsof, Amar hu yisbarach l'moshe, ma titzak elai, daber al b'nei Yisrael v'yisau. At the time of Kriyas Yamsuf, Hashem says to Moshe, what are you davening? Just go. Ratzal Omar, debidithu talya milsa, says Nefesh HaChaim, that means that it was dependent upon Moshe. Shimhema yu betokaf emunah v'bitachon. If the Jewish people would have the correct, the ideal amount of emunah and bitachon, v'yis'u haloch v'nasoa el hayam, and they would just walk into the sea, samuch libam lo yirah, if they were to walk into the sea with the absolute bitachon that walking into the sea would cause the sea to split, as yigrimu al yedei zeh hisorirus lamala shiaseh lahem neis v'yikra lifneihem, that would cause a hisorirus, which would cause the neis. I don't know if he would say this all the time under all circumstances, but the general theory is yes, that having sufficient amounts of bitachon can in and of itself cause a nace. This perhaps is similar to his idea that he says if somebody truly internalized the value of ein od milvado, then kishuf can have no control or power over them. That's how he explains the Gemara in Sanhedrin later. The famous gula based on a Nefesh HaChaim of if someone believes absolutely with certainty that ein od milvado, he won't be able to be harmed by evil. There are many stories I'm sure we're all familiar with. The Briska Rav during the Holocaust. The famous story with Reb Chaim V'lajner and the watch. That if you had enough bitachon that a gold watch would show up. Sure enough, the gold watch showed up. At first glance, it would certainly seem that this view is against the Chazon Ish. There are many Hasidic thinkers who do imply, at least, not like the Chazon Ish, and perhaps even in some Rishonim, as we saw several weeks ago, perhaps the thinker among the Rishonim that had the most pervasive approach to Hashgacha and the most minimalist approach to Teva was the Chovos Halvavos, and there are certain statements there as well that might imply something along these lines. Rav Danny Stein has an article in Tradition a couple years ago where he tries to show that develop this machlokas among different thinkers as to what bitachon means. Does it imply that if you have bitachon, then a nes will happen or not? Yes.
But the Chazon Ish thinks that, right? I guess, right, based on the way you were putting it, that everything that happens, right, is from the will of God.
Mm-hmm. Okay, excellent point. Excellent point. Rav Dessler elsewhere does, if I'm not mistaken, say that, and he says that everything, including issues that are dependent upon other people's free will, and there he deals with the issue of how one can correlate free will with the notion that everything that something happens to a person is from Gzeira. And that relates very much to a discussion we had 2 weeks ago when we did the Ramchal. But Rav Dessler, I believe, says that as well, though you're correct. In the examples that he gave in that passage that I read, he doesn't say that. The next topic I want to briefly discuss, which relates to the topic of Hashgacha, to sugya in its own right, but very much pertains to the general Hashgacha topic, is the concept of mazel. What does mazel mean, and what do we mean when we say Ein mazel li Yisrael? If you turn to page 73, the first source here is the Gemara in Shabbos, Kuf Nun Vav Amud Aleph, where there's a dispute in the Gemara whether or not there's mazel li Yisrael. Rabbi Chanina says there is mazel machken, mazel masher, v'yesh mazel b'Yisrael, and Rabbi Yochanan says ein mazel Yisrael. At first glance, you might say ein mazel Yisrael means that at least with respect to Yisrael, there is no mazel. Mazel plays no role. However, Rashi says otherwise. Rashi says, what does yesh mazel Yisrael mean? She'ein tfilo tztaka mishtanes ha-mazel. Everybody agrees there is mazel. The question is, can the mazel be changed? According to Rabbi Hanina, mazel cannot be changed. Even tefillah, even staka and maisim tovim cannot change mazel. Whereas the opinion that says ein mazel Yisrael, Rabbi Yochanan says, d'al yidei tefillah v'zchus mishtanem mazal letova. Through tefillah and zchus, your mazel can change. Meaning to say, ein mazel Yisrael does not mean there is no mazel. It means that mazel can be overcome. But nobody, neither of the two opinions, actually holds there is no mazel. And in fact, the continuation of the Gemara bears out Rashi's interpretation, because the Gemara brings various illustrations that demonstrates Rabbi Yochanan Shita, that ein mazel Yisrael. And these demonstrations are stories where people had extraordinary maisim tovim that caused their particular mazel to be overcome. So clearly, like Rashi says, ein mazel Yisrael means that extraordinary tefillah, extraordinary maisim tovim, can cause mazel to be overcome. Okay, we'll get there. So, what is mazel? We don't know for now. Mazel, simple understanding, has something to do with constellations and the constellation that you're born in. For example, the Gemara talks about someone who's born in the mazel of Madim, red. Mars has the predilection towards blood. Now again, the notion of mazel, as the Gemara says, doesn't contradict free will. As the Gemara explains, a person can direct that particular predilection in positive or negative ways. He could become a shochet, he could become a mohel, he could become a doctor, right, or a bloodletter, or he could use it to become a murderer or the like. So his predilection towards bloody things cannot be overcome, it would seem, at least perhaps under normal circumstances without extraordinary tefillah and maisim tovim, but it could nevertheless be directed. The Ritva explains this way as well. If you look at, again on page 73, the Ritva Moed Katan, Elish Shchus Gedola Mevatela Samazel. The Kuli Amal Ochazu Lahai, Elatzadik Gamor Shehula Malam and Amazel. According to the opinion of Ein Mazel B'Yisrael, what does that mean? It means that a tzaddik gamor, through a zechus gedola, can overcome that mazel. It's not something that happens frequently or to regular people. It's only, and in a certain sense, it's a type of nes. Just like we saw many of the Rishonim hold that only the tzaddik gamor is zocha to constant tashkacha, so too, it's only the tzaddik gamor that could overcome their mazel. Because mazel, in many ways, is similar to nature. It's built into the system. Ulefikach trei tzadiki lo damu, beha lahadade, kidmefarish va'aziel, dimisayeya le mazla. Here, the Ritva is answering a very difficult question. The Gemara, in Moed Katan, relates a story that there were two tzadikim, two great people. And if you look at it earlier, they are Rabba and Rav Chista. And they were both such great tzaddikim that when they prayed, rain would come. And yet, one of them had a very, very easy, pleasant, bountiful life, and one didn't. One lived a long life, one lived a poor life, one always had plenty of food, one so much so that he even gave good food to his dogs. The other one couldn't even eat dog food himself, right? So the Gemara concludes, Banei chaye umezone, lav b'schus atalya milsa, ela b'mazla. When it comes to matters of banim, how many children a person will have, or whether they live or die, chaye, how long a person will live, mezone, whether they'll be prosperous or not, all those things are lav b'schus atalya milsa. They don't depend on merit, they don't depend on whether a person is righteous or wicked, but rather they depend on mazel. And this story that the Gemara brings illustrates this point. So the Ritva explains, well, what happened to Ein Mazel B'Yisrael? Ein Mazal Yisrael means, first of all, only a Tzadik Gamor, and moreover, even the Tzadik Gamor doesn't totally negate the Mazal. They could somewhat overcome it, but the Mazal is still B'mekomo Omedes, and thus, a Tzadik, an equal Tzadik with a good Mazal, will do a lot better, says the Ritva, than an equal Tzadik with a bad Mazal. So all of this seems to indicate, at first glance, a limitation of hashgacha in the sense of the anhagas hamishpat, the notion that what a person experiences in this world will be entirely dependent upon their behavior. What the Gemara seems to be saying is that most of the time, though perhaps not always, but most of the time, what a person experiences will largely be affected by mazel. And Tosfos goes even further than the Ritva. Tosfos on page 74 at the top. Tosfos says, "Aval pa'amim she'ena mazel mishtane." There are times that even a tzadik gamor, even the person who has tremendous zechuyos and tefillah, the mazel will not change. That's how he explains the Gemara in Moed Katan, which says that there were two tzadikim, one had good mazel, one had bad mazel. There are times that even mazel can't be overcome. Many, many, many of the Rishonim are bothered by this. And one of the questions that is asked by many Rishonim is that this notion of mazel seems to contradict many psukim in the Torah. For example, the Tshuva Sarashba, the first one on page 74, asks, somebody had asked him a question about mazel b'Yisrael, and he says, that's a good question, but reading from the bolded section, ani agdil b'sheila zos, let me even add to your question. Heyach efshar lo l'rava lomar she'en chayai banai umizonai tluyin b'schusa. V'alo mikra mali dibar akasav d'shlosha elu tluyin b'schus. How could anyone say, how could the Gemara say, banai chayai umizonai is not tluyin mazel? There are psukim that explicitly state the contrary for each and every one of these. Banim, it says, lo tia mishakilav akarat. It says in the pasuk that if you follow the will of God, you won't have miscarriages. V'ksiv uvarech privit necha. Your children will be blessed. When it comes to long life, the pasuk says, es mispar yamecha amalei. Leman tarichun yamim. The Torah promises long life to those who obey its God's will. When it comes to mizone, it says, uvarech pri admascha. Vasasa satvua l'shalosh hashanim. Vachalta v'savata. Etc., etc., etc. In other words, there are countless psukim, all of which state that with respect to banai chayei umizonai, they are b'schus atalia milsa, and yet the Gemara states otherwise. The Rashba answers, v'animeshiv b'chol eile ki havtachas haksuvim al haklal ve'en haksuvim mashgichim al haprat. This is an idea we already discussed a little earlier when we did the Ramban, but the Rashba says that those promises in the Torah, all the promises that state that if a person does the will of God, he will live a long life, and if he disobeys the will of God, he will live a short life, his children will die, or he won't have children, all of that is said al haklal, but not al haprat. Those are promises stated to the community, but not to the individual. Thus, when it comes to the community, certainly ein mazel l'Yisrael, and even banai chai mazonai are tali b'schus and not mazel. But when it comes to the individual, then that's not the case. And he continues, skipping a little down, od yesh lanu ladas, and he gives a very interesting answer, an additional answer, which we won't be able to get into now at length, but it's something to think about. When it says that these things, banei chayei mizonei are lav b'schus atayel milsa, those are for the tzadikim mitzad atzmam. Perhaps here, though I'm going to suggest something else in a moment, he's alluding to an idea that the Ramban explains, which is, the Ramban, in several places, most at length in the Shar HaGmul at the end of Tarsa Adam, deals with the issue of the problem of evil. Why is it that tzaddik v'ra lo, rasha v'tov lo? And he suggests that there are indeed two views in Chazal. One opinion which says ein misa b'lo chet and ein yisurin b'lo chet, and another opinion which considers the possibility of misa and yisurin without a chet, at least when it comes to a tzaddik gamur. That there are times that tzaddikim gemurim will in fact experience pain and suffering that is not meant as a punishment and not commensurate in any way with the deeds that they've done. This, he understands, is the secret that Elihu reveals to Eov at the end of the book of Eov, which he refers to as the Sod HaIbor, which is the notion of Gilgul Neshamos, transmigration of the soul, the idea that a person will sometimes suffer, and even at Tzaddik Gamor, though most suffering of most people does relate to chet, either as a punishment or as a wake-up call, but there are some people, for example, Rabbi Akiva or Eov, who experience suffering not because of anything they've done in this lifetime, and therefore, perforce, it must relate to a different lifetime. And that's what he might mean here when he says that L'tzadikim mitzad atzman. Moreover, he continues, aval acherim, in other words, for non-tzadikim, yesh mitzad zchusam. When it comes to a tzaddik, sometimes the mazel is going to be the dominant force. If we explain this in light of the Ramban, the notion that their life is going to be a life, let's say, of suffering because of the mazel they're born into, which relates to their purpose on the world to be misaken certain things that may have related to previous existences of their neshama. And he continues, V'zehu she'amru kol ha'olam nizon b'shvil chanina b'ni. Here he alludes to an additional thing, something which we discussed earlier when we talked about the nevuah of Yaskil Avdi, the idea, at least the simple interpretation of that prophecy in Yeshayahu, not that of the Radak, but more along the lines of those of Rashi, that their possibility exists for tzaddikim to suffer because of the door and atone for the door. Tzaddikim, whether they're nitfas be'avon hador and their mises mechaper alavonos hador, and that's what he's alluding to as well here. Doma l'mash amru razal in chavush matir atzmo mibeis asurin. A fascinating notion. The tzaddik is able to pray for other people, but when he himself is incarcerated, his prayers will not necessarily be able to lift him out of his own incarceration. Let's turn now to another tshuva sarashba that elaborates. The next one. V'afal pi shetimtza b'chizkia shamati es tchinascha hineni yosif al yamecha chamesh esrei shana. The pasuk says, and we saw this year those in the kolel, that the Gemara in Yevamos on Daf Nun actually deals with this issue. There the Gemara has two interpretations how to understand this pasuk. The pasuk says that 15 years will be added to your life, to the life of Chizkiah. Doesn't that imply that mazel could be overcome? The Rashba asks, as does Tosfos in Yevamos, how can you explain that in light of the opinion of Ein Mazel Yisrael? And he answers, Hamelech ke'atzibor v'chol Yisrael tuluyin. Remember the Rashba said before that Ein Mazel Yisrael is only about individuals, not about the tzibor. And thus, the melech is like the tzibor. There is no mazel for the tzibor, and thus there's no mazel for the melech, and therefore the melech can have years added onto his life. And then he says a very important point. V'zu kedasa omer yesh mazel Yisrael. All this that I've said is according to the opinion of yesh mazel Yisrael. In other words, when I said that all of the rewards and the punishment given in the Torah, in Parshas Bechukosai, in Bechukosai Telech Vet Mitzvosai Tishmoru, then you'll get Dagon V'tirosh V'yitzar. All of that, and I said before, that relates to the Tzibor, not the Yachid. That's going according to who? According to the opinion of Yesh Mazel Yisrael. Aval Adas HaOmer Ein Mazel Yisrael? Dibra HaTorah Bein Ala Klal Bein Ala Prat. The Torah, when it promised long life for someone who does the will of God and short life for the opinion who doesn't, when it promises wealth and prosperity and children and health for those who do that which is right and the reverse for those who don't, that is true according to the Man De'Amar and Mazal Yisrael, both for the Klal and for the Prat. V'chein anu osim maisim al pi asvara hazu. We act according to this opinion, meaning to say we follow this opinion. We paskin like the Man De'Amar ein Mazal Yisrael. And according to the Man De'Amar ein Mazal Yisrael, this isn't true. It would seem that the Gemara, when it says Banei Chaim Zonei Ayla V'Zchus Atal Milsa, is going like the opinion Yesh Mazal B'Yisrael. But we assume Ein Mazal B'Yisrael. Ukedamrinan Kiman Matzlinan Ha'idna Amri'i V'Aktziri Kiman Krebiosi. Why is it that we daven for Parnasa? Why is it that every year, every day, we daven that we should have successful Parnasa? Isn't Mizone Tully and Mazel? At least for the individual? No. Because we paskin Ein Mazel Yisrael. And therefore, according to the Man De'Amar, Ein Mazel B'Yisrael. So it makes sense to daven. Because Mazel is not going to be the determining factor, or at least the exclusive factor, when it comes to, let's say, Parnasa. Perhaps Mazel will have an effect on Parnasa, but Tefillah could also have an effect. And that is the conclusion of the Rashba. Perhaps the most fascinating perspective on Mazel can be found in the Drashus HaRan, which we'll look at over here on page 74. An absolutely remarkable understanding. The Ran writes, Umipneze Amru, Hamalach HaMemuna Al HaRayon, Laila Shemo. No telas atipo menichel fnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, v'omer, tipazu matei aleha, chacham o tipesh, ashir o ani, aval tzadik v'rasha lo ka'amar. Hine biyaru shachachma v'osher tluyin b'mazel, kifi rega heirayon v'haleida. What is mazel? In modern days, modern language, we would probably call it genes. The notion of mazel is that a person is born with the ability to be smarter, or higher IQ, or lower IQ, chacham o tipesh. Mazel is something which is determined largely at birth, or before birth, maybe at conception, right? Tipa, matehe aleha. And, of course, the Gemara says, mazel doesn't affect whether a person is going to be a good person or a bad person, sadik v'rasha lo ke'amar, but the inborn natural abilities that a person is born with, that's what mazel is. And that's what the Gemara in Shabbos says, Rabbi Chanina Omer, Mazel Machkim, Mazel Mashir, V'yesh Mazel Yisrael. And then he continues, and he says, like Rashi, that even according to the Man De'Amar Ein Mazel B'Yisrael, that doesn't mean we're not born with genes, we're not born with a predilection of, or the ability to be intelligent, more or less intelligent, stronger or weaker, but rather it means, like we said before, that it could become overcome through extraordinary means. Yes, Nathan. Okay, both of them are very good questions. Let's see how he answers those questions, and if he doesn't address them, we'll get back to them when we finish what he's saying. Aval mikol makom, adayin bekan safek kasha, v'hu, ki medivri Rabbi Chanina, nira shamazel paol bedvarim ha'ela, paol hachrechi, iefshar shetishtaneh b'shum panim, al yedei tfilot tztaka. It would seem then that if the opinion that says Ein Mazel Yisrael holds that Mazel could be overcome through Tfilah Tzedakah and Maisim Tovim, as the stories indicate, then the opinion that says Yesh Mazel Yisrael holds that Tfilah is ineffective to overcome Mazel. A similar question to that which we saw in the Rashba. How does he answer it? Turn to page 75, top line. Vim Kane, first the question, I'm sorry. Yikshim Od Inyane Yud HaTorah Bidvar Magashmiyam. The Rashba's question. How do you explain the Torah's promises for physical prosperity and the like in light of Rabbi Hanina's opinion that Ein Mazel, Yesh Mazel Yisrael? So we saw the Rashba answered that meant that the Torah was speaking on the klal, not on the prat. Let's see how he answers it. Vatshuvetzli, Shadam efshar shinatzel me'apega shichayvuhu ha-mazel al echad mishnei panim. A person can be saved from mazel in one of two ways. The first way is that you can be saved from mazel by avoiding the outcome of the mazel. For example, let's say there is a fire. Again, look at how he's understanding mazel in a somewhat naturalistic way. So if there's a fire, you could be saved from that mazel by running away. Flee. If there's a disease in your town, a blight, so run away, flee the town. Or, alternatively, if there's a fire, you could stay in the house, but you could put on a fireproof cloak, right? A Holocaust cloak. Get some type of fireproof coat, a Holocaust cloak, and you'll be protected, right? So first option is that you don't try to defeat the mazel. Rather, given the mazel that exists, you save yourself. So if there's a fire, you run away from the fire, or you put on your cloak with a Dama Salamandra, which everyone knows is fireproof, and you'll be saved. The second way is what? Is to go ahead and essentially stay where the fire is and overcome the mazel, defeat the mazel, anase, right? Like Hananya, Mishael, Azariah. They were thrown into the oven, they didn't have the Dama Salamandra, they didn't flee the oven, and yet they lived. So thus there are two ways of dealing with mazel, with something like a fire. You can flee it, flee from it, or you can fight it. The first model, everybody agrees to is possible. Meaning to say, even Rabbi Hanina, who holds in that Yesh Mazel Yisrael, agrees that you could run away from mazel, you can flee the fire. Everybody agrees to that. And moreover, how does he explain the brachos in the Torah? The brachos in the Torah mean that if someone observes the Torah and obeys the Torah, God will give them the wisdom to know how to deal with these types of dangerous or harmful situations. They'll understand that it's a good idea to have a fire alarm in your house so that if there's a fire at night, you'll wake up and you'll be able to get out of your house before the fire kills you. This is very similar to the idea we saw in the Rambam, both in the Mar Nevuchim, in his interpretation of Iov, as well as in the Yad Chazaka, in Hilchos Deos, where he said, that is what it does. Yesh Mazel Yisrael says that when the Torah promises prosperity for those who obey his will, it means to say that he's going to give them the wisdom to know how to respond to hazardous mazel, to dangerous situations like a fire. V'hu shehashem yisborach yasim b'lev osei ritzono la'asos pa'alim asher mitzidam yinatzlu mehezek hama'areches im heyos shema'areches lo tishaches. Without the ma'areches falling apart, right? Meaning to say without a deviation from the mazel, from the teva, they will be saved. Like the Rambam said, the tzaddik will know not to board the ship that is likely to sink in a storm. And that is what the opinion of Yesh Mazel Yisrael would maintain. Ein Mazel Yisrael would maintain that there are times that through extraordinary tefillah or ma'asim tovim or the like, a person could be saved even without, as it were, leaving the burning building. A miracle would happen. They won't leave the burning building, they won't even have the fireproof cloak, but they'll somehow miraculously be saved. And to continue a little later, ובזה העניין יסתלק הספק הגדול המטמיה בהנהגת העולם בצדק ורע לו רשע וטוב. Once we've understood this, we could answer the age-old question, the greatest question, why is it that the righteous suffer and the wicked prosper? והוא, שאילו היו השפעים הנמשכים בזה העולם התחתון פרטיים. If the world worked in a way that mazel was such or nature was such that it related to each individual, then you would indeed have the problem. Well, why should this tzaddik experience suffering? Why should this rasha prosper? Aval inyan eino kein, ki manhige ha'olam atachton inyanam klali. The rules of teva, the rules of science, the rules of mazel are al haklal. Ad she'efshar lomar she'yimashech mehem hatov tamid. And thus, inevitably, there are going to be times that even the righteous person will suffer. Even the wicked person will prosper. Because the world is run through klalim. Kasher nemar, she'efshar l'shemesh l'vashel ha'peros, v'lo t'chamim rosh ha'ish. Just like it's ridiculous to say, to expect the sun to ripen the fruits, but not to make you hot when you're walking in the sun. The two are dependent upon each other. So too, when, let's say, diseases come into the world, they're going to affect everybody. And he explains with this a fascinating idea. Skipping a little. Uvize inyan matmiya. He's bothered by the question. Why is it that we say, after Makas Bechoros, that the firstborn children must be so grateful, right? We say that they were chayev in the avoda because HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved them, and thus, even now that they don't do the avoda, they have to do pidyon haben. And what does it say? It says, because I didn't kill you in Egypt when I killed all the firstborn children. Ask the Ran, that's ridiculous. It's like the king going to a person. There are two people. One who's innocent and one who's found guilty of murder. The king executes the guilty party and he doesn't execute an innocent party. And he says, ah, you owe me your life, I didn't kill you. That's ridiculous. There's no reason why you should have killed me. I don't owe you any gratitude for your not having killed me. I was in Chayiv Misa. So what gratitude does the Bechor have that they weren't killed in Egypt? There's no reason why they should have been killed. Only the Egyptians should have been killed. The Egyptians were being punished for enslaving the Jewish people, for murdering them, so they should be punished. Why should the individual be grateful, the Bechor be grateful? And his answer is, Aval HaTshuva, She'ena po'alim ha'magi'im ba'olam ha'tachton l'ish ish ayidei sibos pratios, aval yidei sibos kololos, She'ein ratzon Hashem yisborach shiyishtaneh teva kefi ish ish. Kadosh Baruch Hu does not want, notice the word teva, he keeps on switching between teva and mazel. Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want teva to be changed on an individual basis for an individual person. U'ksharatz Hashem yisborach lahachviz bichorei mitzrayim chidesh eze inyan mafsid u'misyaches lebichoros. And thus, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to kill the Egyptian firstborns, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent a disease that affected all firstborn children. There's some type of biological commonality between firstborn children, the Ran surmises, and thus there was a disease in Egypt that was wiping out and killing all firstborn children. Thus, one would have expected that both Jews, Jewish Bechorim, and non-Jewish Bechorim, should also have been killed. Because, after all, if there's a disease that affects the Bechor, so there, that would affect everyone. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu did a nes. And the Jewish firstborn children weren't killed. For that, they indeed owe a tremendous debt of gratitude to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because they should have died. Not because they were deserving of death, but because teva is such that if a disease comes, it affects everybody. That's how he explains it. And then he says, well, don't ask. The Medrash says that there was the oldest child in each house died, and there could be no biological commonality between the oldest person in each household. And he says, that's true, but that's al pi derech hadrash, but al pi derech hapshad, it's only the firstborns, it's only the peterechem, and it's all those peterechem who have that biological commonality that were affected by the disease. Then he asks an interesting question. He says, well, if that's the answer to Tzadik Viralo, it's very simple, right? So, page 76, third paragraph, Valza derech lo yishar safek matmiya binyan Tzadik Viralo vashavol tovlo. So what is it that all the tzadikim throughout Nach are always asking and crying and wondering about Tzadik Viralo? He answers that those weren't questions, those were krechts, those who are crying out in anguish. V'chol ma'asha amar ha'kasov, ki kinesi b'holulim, shalom r'sha'im ereh, the mizmor of Asaf, which is all about why the righteous suffer. It wasn't a question. He wasn't asking why. Eino ela kimisonein al hamida hazos hanoheges, shalo yenela mehem, taimo shel davar. Yirmiyanu, madua derech r'sha'im tzalecha. But it's very hard when you see it. When you see a child die of leukemia, it's very painful. He understood why, but that doesn't prevent him from crying out and calling. Another, perhaps even further, in terms of the more naturalistic explanation of Ein Mazal Yisrael, could be found in the base of Bechira and Moed Katan, who writes, Val yochush l'mash amruch kan chayi banei mezonai lav b'schus atayo mils al b'mazla. Don't worry about what the Gemara here says, that mazel affects life and children and mizonos. Ki hum amar yachid lo yizbeluhu darche hadas b'shum panim. That opinion is a das yachid, and it doesn't make any sense. He says a little bit less in the Beis HaBechira in his introduction, where he writes, what does it mean that there's mazel? It means that darchei Torah, ein mazel Yisrael, means darchei Torah yigderuhu v'yishmerehu mitzoki tim v'hu etzli notzar mitzvah lo yeda davara. Like we said before. Okay. Guess we're not going to get to Bechiras Yisrael today. I'm not going to do the rest of this packet, though. There's a lot of interesting further makoros here. One interesting set of makoros I have here is from on the topic of makah. We know that Torah says you have to put a fence around your roof, and the pasuk has a very interesting lashon of kipol hanofel. And Chazal say, what does it mean hanofel? Roi ze lipol misheshes yimei bereshis. Well, what does that mean? And what does it mean? So there are a number of makoros here where, again, you see the different approaches to Ashkacha manifest themselves in the interpretation of that pasuk. We have, for example, the Rambam in Mor Nevuchim, a fascinating interpretation of the Shla and the like. So I recommend, if you have further interest in that topic, you could do that. Since we only have 5 minutes left, I guess next week we don't have Shir. In 2 weeks, we'll do the topic of Bechiras Yisrael. I decided that after this week, for the remainder of the year, I think we're going to do smaller topics. Hopefully, that's why you see the new Makar sheets are much smaller. And we'll try to do them 1 week at a time, so we could see more briefly, as opposed to what we've been doing until now, where we've been doing more in depth, more briefly, a number of different topics, one each week. So we'll close in the last 5 minutes with a little bit of Inyana Dioma on the topic of Purim, insofar as it relates to our topic of hashkacha, what we've been studying the last several shiurim. The pasuk in Esther describes the response of the Jewish people to the impending tragedy of annihilation by Haman. Mordechai yada es kol asher nasa vayikra Mordechai es begandav vayilbash sak va'efer. Mordechai ripped his garments and he wore sak va'efer, which are of course what somebody wears when they're in avelos, in mourning. Notice how, first of all, the pasuk doesn't even mention that he davened. Rather, it says that he did kriya, kriyas begadim, sak va'efer. This wasn't just the response of Mordechai as an individual, but uvechol medina uvemedina asher dvar melech v'daso magia evel gadol la'yehudim v'tzom uvchi umispeid sak va'efer yutzal arabim. It was a response of evel, of avelos, of sak va'efer, of mispeid, of hespedim, all the terms that we usually associate with mourning. And the question we have to ask is twofold. First of all, why is there no explicit mention of tefillah? Certainly, that was the most important thing. And second of all, what is the role of avelos here? Avelos we usually think of as a response to a tragedy that's already happened. After somebody has died, a person engages in nihugei avelos. But here, there were nihugei avelos before the tragedy actually struck. The Rambam, we mentioned earlier in Hilchos Tainis, says, "V'davar zeh midarkei hatshuva shebizman shetavo tzara v'yizaku aleha v'yariu yedu hakol shebiglal ma'aseihem haraim hora lahem kakasuv avonoseichem hitu v'gomer v'zehu shiyigrom lahem lahasir atzar me'aleihem." What is the appropriate response of tragedy? It is the recognition that the impending tragedy is happening because of their actions. And thus, they respond through tshuva. Avalim lo yizaku, velo yariu, ela yomru davar zem eminaga olam iralanu, vitzarazu nikra nikres. However, if their response is to say, this is just minaga olam, it's to say, this is mikra. It's happenstance. It's nature. So then, harezu derech achzarius. This is cruelty. Fascinating word. The goremes lamli dabek b'maseim arayim, v'tosef hatzara tzaros acheros. And that's what the pasuk says. V'halachtem imi bekeri. If you attribute the misfortunes you experience to happenstance, v'halachtem imachem b'chamas keri. Kilomar. Kishavi alechem tsara kadesha tashuvu im tomru shehu keri osif lachem chamas oso keri. Failing to respond to a tsara implies the belief that it's not a heavenly decree. It's not because of maseim harayim. And thus, throughout Tanakh, whenever the Jewish people experience suffering, so the response is that of avelos, of tshuva, of tainis, of sak va'efer. So this begins to answer our question, but still, why the lack of tefillah in Esther? We know, Chazal tell us, that the midah of anava, the midah of Amalek, is one of keri. The pasuk in Dvarim says, asher karcha baderech, Rashi says, karcha is lashon mikra. Chazal, in many midrashim, focus on this idea that Amalek is mikra, the belief that everything is happenstance, that nothing's for a purpose. Even Yetzias Mitzrayim, even the greatest of miracles, Kriyas Yamsuf, they attacked subsequently because they said it's mikra. That's why Amalek is always called in Chazal, for example, in Shmos Rabbah, Parasha Chav Zayin, elates. Be'enosh leitz yach kampesi. Elates is someone who, when they're punished, leitz taka. When they're punished, they don't learn the lesson. Why? Because it's mikra. If they experience suffering, but it's just mikra, it just happenstance, of course you're not going to learn from it. That's what elates is. And that's why Amalek is always called elates. the reason why we dafka respond in the Megillah the way we did, because we had to counteract the koach of Amalek. If Amalek was the koach of Mikra, of Leitzanus, of Kari, so we had to respond by the reverse, by acknowledging that the suffering that we were experiencing was the decree of God. And that is what Avelos is all about, as we're going to explain. How does Amalek respond to tragedy? The Pasuk, we'll read this week, discusses how Agag went to his death. Vayelech Agag Madanos. Madanos, Radak explains, means either in shackles or with pomp. Why did he walk with pomp? Because there's nothing to be learned from this lesson. Achein tzar ma'aram aves. In fact, I think Rav Huttner, who discusses this beautifully in the first shtickle in Purim, writes that you could combine the two interpretations of Radak. He pranced in chains. Even when he was in chains, even when he was going to be executed, he pranced. Madanos. And that's the idea of Avelos. Evel gadol ayehudim. It's fascinating. Where else does the Rambam use the term achzarios in this way? He says, kol mi she'eno misavel kamo she'tzivu chachamim harei ze achzari. Just like not responding with za'aka to a impending tragedy is achzarios, so too not doing avelos is achzarios. Because not being misavel karaui is saying that it's mikra olam. And being tola something on mikra is achzarios. Rather, what should one do in avelos? Eli yifached v'yidag v'yifashvesh b'maisa v'yachzer v'tshuva. Avelos is all about tshuva. Avelos is not just about, and the Rambam explains, all the nehuge avelos are like this. They're not just a response to grief and sadness about the loss of a loved one, but it's all about tshuva, the Rambam says. Avelos is midarkei tshuva. It's the recognition that it's not mikra. And the lack of that recognition, the Rambam says, is achzarios. The same thing. Whether it's before the tragedy arrives or after the tragedy has already happened. The role of a person is to recognize that it's from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that it's not mikra, and to learn the lesson. So Avelos is all about tshuva. And thus we understand it's very beautiful why the Torah focuses on Avelos more than anything else when the Jewish people experience the impending tragedy on Purim. Why Avelos? Why Evel Gadol Ayudim? Som Uvchi? Why Sakfa Efer? Why Kriyas Begadim? Because they had to counteract Amalek. For Amalek, none of that makes sense because everything is Mikra. Avelos is the notion that it's from HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the lessons have to be learned. The Ramban in his Torah Sa'adam in the Akdama, where he talks about the purpose of Avelos, highlights this very same idea. He writes, the entire Akdama is written in beautiful poetry. Klolo shel davar b'mesh iye v'asher kfar haya ki haketzef v'hadaga iveles u'mishuga v'im yisya'ish v'yisnecham l'vavo lo yacham yitlehu b'mikra u'b'minag. What is the opposite of Avelos, the Ramban says, yitlehu b'mikra u'b'minag? Carry, Amalek. That's, of course, the idea of the poor, of the lottery in Purim's story, right? Rav Dessler elaborates, in the world there are three types of things. There's the supernatural, the coincidental, and the natural. The supernatural is clearly from God. The natural is natural. But what about the coincidental, the lots? Haman and Amalek felt lottery is just coincidence. The yesod of Purim, and that's why Purim is Kippurim, is the notion that everything is not just mikra. There's much more when you study the topic of Purim in this theme, but just we're out of time. So to conclude, v'chodesh hazeh asher nefach lahem yagon l'simchom evel yamtif. This the month that switched from Avelos to Yamtif. So too may we also experience this transformation from Avelos to Yantif. I want to wish you all a Freilich and Purim and a wonderful Shabbos, and see you in a couple weeks. Thank you very much. Amen.